I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. I'm so excited for you to listen to this episode. I believe we all have a story, and I believe by telling these stories, we can inspire and empower each other on our self-care journey. This season, I've teamed up with ReproMed, Ireland's leading fertility clinics. Having been through IVF myself, I understand how daunting a fertility journey can be. I'm proud to partner with ReproMed, whose world-class team offer the expertise, empathy, and compassionate care needed to help and support you. They have clinics all over Ireland in Galway, Dublin, Cork, Drogheda and Kilkenny. They're never too far away and will do everything possible to help you grow your family. You can visit repromed.ie for more. And now their sister clinic, reproscan.ie, is available for early pregnancy and gender scanning. Hello, so I'm going to start this week's podcast with a really short story. So I went for a walk last year and I was listening to something, I can't remember what it was, but someone mentioned Martha Beck and called her Oprah's life coach. I remember exactly where I was. I stopped walking. I was in disbelief. I couldn't believe that Oprah has a life coach. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, of course she does. We all need guidance and we can all continue to learn no matter where we are on our journey. Oprah and Martha worked with each other for nearly 20 years. Oprah, as many of you know, has had a huge effect on my life. So when I found out about Martha, I started to follow her and I reached out last month. I asked her to be a guest on The Good Glow. And a couple of days later at my stepdad Joe's birthday, Jamie tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Martha said yes." I couldn't believe it. I thought long and hard about how to approach this interview. And of course, Martha's a life coach. So I thought, let's give her some real life examples and see what her advice for us is. And then on Friday, Audrey and Jack came for dinner and I was telling them about this podcast. And we actually just sat around discussing what Martha had told me for about an hour, like her no lie vow and leaning towards things that make you warm, how to get happy. When Martha speaks about living with integrity, what I took from that is that she means living in flow and being truly happy. So when she talks about nature, that's, you know, who we really are in our heart and soul. And then that gets affected by culture, which is external factors like family, friends, society. So they're just a few things to listen out for. And I would think if you enjoyed my podcast with Jerry Hussey that this is going to be a real treat for you. Before we get into it, I just wanted to mention we're almost sold out. National Concert Hall, May 30th. We filmed something life-changing last week that we're going to screen at the show. I'm so excited to bring that to you. And like I said many times before, I want you to leave the show feeling so motivated and ready to take on the world. We're almost sold out. For the last remaining tickets, you can head over to nch.ie or click on the link in the show notes. So I'm going to leave you with a quote from Queen Oprah about Martha. She said, "For over 15 years, I have looked to Martha Beck for her wisdom and marveled at how she helps people through crisis in their lives with such grace, insight and humor." And this podcast is going to prove just that. Martha, welcome to the Good Glow Podcast. I'm so excited for this conversation. I think books come along for me once a year, I would say, that really connect with me. And we know Queen Oprah speaks about aha moments all the time. And in the way of integrity, there's so many aha moments.
Thank you.
So thank you for that gift to the world.
Thank you for reading it. Nobody reads anymore. You're amazing.
Oh, no, it was magical. And something that really connected with me is when you said we're trying to be the version of ourselves that we think we need to be. And wow, there are so many people out there. I mean, do we all do that?
Yes, to some extent we do, because we're so dependent on one another. We're such an interdependent species that we're born with, you know, what I call the true nature. It's your personality, it's your genotype. And then before you can even talk, you're immediately being influenced by the people around you. And you're very much set up by evolution to respond to that. So whatever your particular culture, whether it's a family culture or a local culture, ethnic, religious, whatever, whatever messages you get, you immediately conform to them. Now, if your nature happens to really correspond well with your culture, there won't be much of a disconnect. But if you are being pressured by whatever culture to sell out your nature, you'll do it. Mm. And this is really a universal thing among human infants, I think.
So do we have to make a conscious decision then to not do that? Or, you know, like, how do we navigate that? Because, like, even when I look at my child, I have a 5-year-old daughter, and she's sitting on the couch, I'm like, what messages is she getting from me? You know, if I'm not paying her enough attention, you know, what's going to happen? So I think, you know, being the version of ourselves that we think we need to be is for me, I suppose, I will give you an example in my life. So I put myself into a box where I told myself I was a certain type of person. So I would say, oh no, that's not for me. I'm not that type of person. So how do we take ourselves out of that box and kind of get to know who we really are?
Well, first of all, I want to go to your point about your daughter on the couch. Just notice that you're watching this and thinking in your mind, oh my goodness, I'm influencing my child. Psychology tells us all this. And what pressures am I putting on her? You're thinking about what you should do to be the right kind of mother, instead of being like an animal mother who is just present there with the child, but even more there with herself, right? I remember seeing a leopard mom in South Africa, and that she had a cub and it just kept bouncing on her and chomping on her ears. And at one point she just pounced up in the air, came down squarely on the little cub and just lay on him. And their two tails were flashing out the back. And I thought, this is a mother who's absolutely true nature. You know, she's not hurting him, but she's making her needs known. So as you talk about, even as you talk about how to be a good mother, you're already falling into a cultural pit. And the way out of that is to start, well, first of all, the more divided you are from your true self, the more you will experience suffering. And that's the whole point of my book, is that we're meant to, integrity just means intact. And we're all born intact, and then we split when we go after the culture. And that splitting is unconscious, and we don't know it's there, except that it creates suffering, emotional suffering. And if there is no emotional suffering, there's no reason to address it. But if we are suffering in some way, emotionally, sometimes physically, our relationships, our careers, it's time to stop and look at the place where we abandoned ourselves and split ourselves from our true nature.
Mm. I love that, because I think there's a certain time in our lives where we just become really busy and we neglect ourselves. But are we often talking ourselves out of that time with ourselves?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I mean, one of the strongest imperatives that you'll find in most Western cultures is that sleeping is considered kind of a weakness. Whereas, you know, so the time we spend sleeping is only about half of what people were sleeping at the beginning of the 20th century. So if you took any animal and cut its sleep in half, it would cause, I mean, the stuff that happens to our bodies when we don't sleep enough is nightmarish. It is everything we don't want to happen. But most of us don't sleep enough because of the cultural pressure. I mean, it's there every minute of every day we're experiencing pressures to go against the natural needs of our bodies and our hearts. And we don't, it's so multifaceted, we don't even count the ways until we start paying attention.
Oh, it's so fascinating. It's just about looking at something differently, isn't it, to what our brain is trained. So why are we all so afraid of being still?
Oh, because, I mean, Pascal said all of our miseries come from the fact that we're unable to sit quietly alone in a room. And that's because the moment you sit down, all the pain from all the splitting from your true self that you've done your whole life begins to surface, because it wants to resolve itself. It wants to figure things out and put you into alignment with your nature. And so the way it does that is by creating suffering. And when you sit down in stillness, you notice it big time. And then you're faced with these terrifying decisions. Do I buck the trend, sleep 10 hours a night, and get up at 11 and let my friends hate me for it? My friends used to call me the sleep slut. And I was like, you try 12 years of chronic pain. I'll call you, you know, This is how it works. This is how my body works. So yeah, when we're still, the truth rises up. And we're afraid of the truth because many times it demands change.
So if you're still and you're having thoughts, say, I think everyone's worst, and it's not a worst fear because there are so much more serious things in life, but You say it in the book that, you know, looking up into the sky and saying, it wasn't supposed to be this way. I think with stillness may bring those thoughts for people. And where on earth do you go from that point of admitting that to yourself?
Well, it's really fascinating. I mean, I was brought to this point many times during my life, almost as if this was my life mission to figure out what to do. When you get still and you think, this is not working, this isn't the way it was supposed to be, there's a voice inside that tells you that. I call it the ring of truth or your inner teacher, whatever you want. But it's an aspect of yourself. And it knows things aren't right. And that leads one to conclude it probably knows what is right. So if you sit quietly with it and it says this is wrong, and you keep sitting and you keep paying attention, and you can do formal meditation, or you can just pay attention, or you can go to a coach or a therapist or whatever. But the stillness and the asking, what is it meant to be like, will get you an answer. And very often that answer comes in the form of a surge of fascination or enjoyment toward a certain activity, person, or place. You know, it may not come in words. It won't be. Have you played the game, you're getting warmer, you're getting colder?
Yeah.
Okay, that's how your true self communicates with you. It never says, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to divorce your husband, marry this guy named Phil. You'll meet him in a couple of weeks. And then you're going to set up a taxidermy stand in the middle of Dublin for the rest of your lives. That is not how you get the instructions. The instructions are, okay, this isn't right. Okay, what feels a little better? Well, I could lie down. Yes, that would be good. Now, if you don't go lie down, then you don't get the next instruction, because It's you're getting warmer, you're getting colder. I used to play this game with clients, and they would come in, they would get stumped, and they would stop and say, where is it? And I would just say, that's not warm. I'm not allowed to tell you that. You just have to start moving, trying things, and seeing what feels warmer. And the reduction of suffering goes down and down and down with every little move you make. And then it gradually transitions, and suddenly you're seeking more and more joy. And it keeps getting warmer, 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 till your whole life is very, very warm.
Oh my God, that has just blown my mind. Because when you were saying that, so I think, first of all, when you're still and you're afraid of the things coming up, You're saying that not only will the things come up, but you will find the answers, which is very reassuring for people to know that there is a way, there is a path. And then what you're saying about getting warmer. So my whole life, well, I would say in my 20s and my early 30s, all I ever wanted to do was get into the sea. But I don't like cold water, right? So I went on my honeymoon to Barbados when I was 30, into like crystal clear waters, still didn't get into the sea. Came home, got sick. I'd go to the beach, I'd see people getting into the water, and my whole like body, just every part of me wanted to get into the sea. So in my recovery from cancer, I finally took the plunge and got into the sea. And with that brought confidence. It brought this inner strength, this warrior. I was so proud of myself, you know. I was no longer the weak person in my marriage. Like my Jamie would get into the sea. Jamie would do hard things. Now I was doing it, and he was afraid to get into the sea some days because it was too cold. So isn't that really interesting that you know, stepping towards the things that are warmer, that yes. that unlocks the joy.
Yeah. And that is the opposite of what we're told. We're told, do the difficult, hard things first. Eat your vegetables, then you might get a treat. But the way nature works is that the moment you turn towards something that's right for you, all your senses say, that's right. And I still can't believe that people pay me money to tell them, okay, bottom line is this. If something makes you feel really horrible and over time it's destroying you, maybe back off it a little. If something makes you super happy and your health and your mood and everything elevate every time you do it, maybe do that instead. Mm. We're done. We are done. You have now heard everything in all my books and everything I've ever told a client. We're done. But they keep paying me to say it over and over and over in different ways. And the fact is, we all know it in our physiology. We all know it in our hearts.
Yeah.
And yet we forget.
And here you are still with the same message. But I like that, you know, I only discovered you in 2021 and I'm now getting all of your messages and then I can pass them on to my listeners, which is amazing. I think it's really interesting that, you know, I worked in this job for 10 years and didn't feel like I was ever getting this promotion that I always wanted, which was into the radio station next door to read the news. And I was the entertainment reporter. And I was like eating my breakfast at my desk, my lunch at my desk, working overtime, wondering, like, can anyone see me here? Like, I am giving this my all. So I went then off to get my cancer treatment and started to invest in myself for the first time in my life. And then they called me up and said, hey, when you come back to work, do you want this job in 98FM? And I said, are you serious? I have wanted this job for 10 years. Why am I getting it now? But it's about, you know, when people might say, I absolutely hate my job. But it's not about, I suppose, quitting your job, is it? Is it about, you know, having a certain, not dedicating your life to your work, but then maybe finding something else or investing in yourself another way?
It's different for different people. It's different for every situation. What I notice from having worked with thousands of people is that what happened is you sat there filling the female role, not speaking up, just showing them how hard you could work and how much of your life you could spend on the job, hoping that you would be noticed and rewarded. And you were invisible to yourself. It's very, was talking to Brooke Baldwin, who used to have her own show on CNN. And one thing that's surprised me about her is she would just go in and say, give me the job. And she realized women don't do that. So she started doing it because men were doing it and it worked. But the culture says we don't do that. Then cancer came along and you gave yourself permission to say, no, I'm very important. Like my preferences, my health, my joy, it all matters. And almost supernaturally, when we shift ourselves into valuing and getting into alignment, getting into integrity, other people sort of feel the message. Oh, look at Georgie. She's important. And so it ends up connecting. That's a weird thing. I wrote this book after doing many, many of what I call integrity cleanses, where I'll go for a year or more without telling any lies, without doing anything that I don't want to do, without lying to myself. And in every case, all this magic starts happening. I don't mean that. I'm not in this new age. I'm going to manifest stuff. But the moment I go to pure integrity, where I just am myself, and I will say no to anyone when I mean no, everything I've ever wanted comes toward me. And that, so I would guess that's what was happening with you.
Yeah, so interesting. And you speak about that, taking that no lie vow. And I was dying for this conversation because I couldn't wait to ask you about this. So a no, so if someone says to you, you've taken this no lie vow, you've vowed not to lie for a year. And someone says, you know, do you want to come out with me on Friday night? I think it'll be great. Are you saying, no, I don't want to?
First, I say, let me check.
Okay.
Then I check. do I want to? Is it warmer for me or is it colder? And if it's warmer, I'll say, absolutely. And if it's colder, I'll say, rain check.
Mm. What if you know deep down it will be warmer, but you don't feel like it?
No, it's got to be what I'm feeling right now, because there is no future. When you get to the future, it's always now. There is no past. It was always now when you were in it. So the guidance of truth can only come to you in the one moment that is actually real now. So when you say, okay, right now I'm going to calculate that at a future date, I am likely to enjoy going out to dinner with this person, you're off your base. You have to be present to tell the truth.
Okay. And can you give me other examples of the no lie vow? Like, what does it really mean?
It's a lot of internal checking to see whether I really, like, if somebody asks me a question, what is my real answer? I actually lost a friend once because she asked if she could come to my house. And I said, let me check. And later she said, you paused. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. I pause and I check. And she's like, oh, that's it. That's a deal breaker. I was like, okay. So there's that pause and checking. And then there's a little bit of, you know, intellectual exercise to make sure that the truth comes out in the form of kindness. Mm. It's not about being brutal. It's not about cutting people off at the knees or being self-righteous. If I don't want something, or if I need to say something, if somebody says, you know, do I look fat in this? I would say, let's go over to the mirror and see what you think. You know, I don't offer intense opinions, because I actually know that I don't know for certain what's true. It's all screened through the lens of my perception. So I'm very, very, I don't have many opinions. Yeah. I don't know anything. I go into what in Asia they call don't know mind. It's like, well, what do you think that will happen in the next election? I have no idea. You know?
I've actually noticed that over the last while, I have said, I don't know, to my husband so much more than I used to. So
that's the truth.
Yeah, I used to pride myself, you know, I worked in a newsroom, you know, I know all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And now my husband will come to me about, say, a news story or something he's seen. So he'd say, you know, what's the story with this? And I'd say, I don't know. And do you know what? It's the best thing ever, because I don't feel like I need to have all the answers all of the time for everyone around me.
You don't have any. One of my sort of mentor friends while I was preparing to write this book is a former Zen monk. And he would drive people crazy. He went to jury duty, and he never has to serve on a jury because he always says he doesn't believe in eyewitness testimony. He's like, we don't know what we're seeing. We have no idea. You think you saw a murder? How? Nah, it could completely be an illusion. And they're all like, well, you're dismissed. But he's very, very... The Korean Zen master who trained him had one thing: keep don't know mind. Don't know mind will not fail you. If you wait in the truth of the don't know mind and you feel the impulse of the heart, the soul, you will always be correct. You'll always be doing the right thing for yourself. So don't know mind, it's not something that is celebrated in the West, but it's the truth.
Yeah. That's kind of like how to give yourself a break, isn't it?
Yeah, because you don't know. You really don't know. I have a son with Down syndrome, and he is like, he says it proudly. You can say, like, what's the weather going to be? I don't know. And he's like, proud. So we all say it that way now.
Oh, so good. Interestingly, when we were speaking there about the no lie vow and not doing things that, you know, just don't feel right for you. And Oprah, I think, spoke about that. I think it was in one of her masterclass podcasts about how she was asked to be on, I think it was like charity committees and being flown all over the world to show up at events and things like that. Yeah, yeah. And she finally came to a place where she would just say, no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. And then that you know, allowed her to be free, I suppose, in what she did want to do, and in that way to thrive in life.
Yeah, And all of us are under tremendous pressure to do things we don't want to do. I remember being in an I was at something with a bunch of women who'd won a weekend with Oprah at a spa, and she was there with Gail, and we were all in an exercise class. And she stopped right in the middle and she said, "I'm done with this. I don't want to do it anymore." And Gail was like, "You can't just stop." And she was like, "Watch me." And she just walked away. And I thought, that is awesome. Because there's so much pressure on her to do what billions of people want her to do. Mm. And she has to be incredibly strong to stay in her integrity. But luckily she is.
Oh, and I so enjoyed your conversation with her in Super Soul Conversations, especially when you were coaching her a little bit on Stedman falling asleep when mm-hmm. he watches the TV. And that's the same in our house. Like we can't wait for Friday nights, and then we turn on a movie and I'm straight asleep. But that's my comfort. It's comforting for me to be asleep on the couch with Jamie there and all is well in the world. But I really enjoyed that moment that you had with her. It was a beautiful insight into her life.
Yeah, she's a legend. What else can we say?
She's
but like a real model of integrity. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, when we talk about soul teachers, she's certainly one of mine. I think her book mm-hmm. What I Know For Sure really gave me permission. I read it in chemotherapy, and the nurses would pass me and I'd be crying and they'd be like, "Georgie, are you okay?" And I'd say, "This book is changing my life." It was so simple. But yeah, absolutely one of my soul teachers. Another part of your book, The Way of Integrity, that really spoke to me was when you spoke about 1 degree turns. Very simple. I always speak about giving yourself 1% more, which is, you know, 15 minutes of your day. So can you tell us a little bit about the 1 degree turns?
Yeah, I mean, I did my first integrity cleanse at the age of 29, and it was cold turkey. I decided that I set a New Year's resolution that I wouldn't lie for a calendar year. And I kept my resolution. And during that year, I either lost or walked away from my family of origin, my profession, my job, my marriage, my home, like everything went in the fire. So I would not recommend that. It all turned out well. I'm really glad it happened, but it was rough. It was a rough ride. So what I suggest is that you figure out what things would be a bit warmer for you. And every day you just turn slightly away from what's cooler and slightly toward what's warmer. And 10 minutes of your day can go to that. You know, I'm going to take it away from what's colder and give it to what's warmer. If you keep doing that, it's like changing the direction of an airplane that's flying 10,000 miles, but you only do it 1 degree every half hour. So you never really notice the turn, but you end up in a really, really different place.
Wow. And I love that. Just leaning towards the warmer things. I hope you're enjoying Martha Beck. I'm so excited for you to hear the rest of the podcast. I think there's so many aha moments. I felt pure joy at the end of it. And I really enjoyed the last few minutes of our conversation where we speak about the joy button and getting out of bed and taking on each and every day. First, before we get back to Martha, I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank ReproMed for supporting the Good Glow. A fertility journey is personal, and ReproMed pride themselves in taking compassionate interest in your care. Having spent time with the team myself, I know they will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a safe, supportive, and honest environment. ReproMed.ie is packed full of information on IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and so much more. So head over to ReproMed.ie for more. When we speak about like acceptance, and in my life I have recently had a very upsetting setback, I suppose you would call it. We were supposed to do an embryo transfer in Ukraine on the 21st of February, and we had our surrogate. Like, I felt like she was, she still is a guardian angel in my life. But then 3 days later, there was the Russian invasion, and it was heartbreaking. And obviously for people in Ukraine, what they're going through is so hard. But there's this kind of pit in my stomach all the time. And I'm like, how? And there's so many women, you know, in Ireland, all over the world, who deal with the disappointment of, you know, fertility or anything that they may be facing. Like, how do I know if I'm okay or if I'm dealing with something?
If you're allowing yourself to know what you know and feel what you feel, you're going to be all right. Well, the full thing is know what you know, feel what you feel, say what you mean, and do what you want. So in this case, we can ride over tremendous, tremendous losses, but we have to feel them completely. So in this book, I follow Dante from the dark wood of error down through the inferno, through hell, and then up the other side to purgatory and finally to paradise. And that pattern will happen to you every time you experience a major loss. So you have to allow yourself to grieve. And that involves all the emotions of grieving, anger, despair, bits of hope, giving way to despair again. And you have to keep yourself, you hold yourself with compassion. You know, when I said you bring all the parts of yourself together and get them to sing the same song, There's a central core part that I call the inner teacher that has to love you enough to let you feel everything about what's going on.
Okay.
So you have to feel it all the way. And in order to make that warm, you have to hold yourself. You have to create a holding zone, like a cocoon where a caterpillar can dissolve, right? They do that. They just dissolve into a liquid. And grieving does that for us. And so we need a contained space, time, a safe place, a safe person, and just feel what you're feeling. And then what happens is once you've felt it completely, you realize it no longer hurts. And it starts to become a source of strength. You've been through this with your cancer. And this is the same. If you let the feelings go to their conclusion, then the inner self will say, here's the action to take next. And it will be up out of the inferno with a clear direction. And you will know what to do step by step by step.
Yes.
And you'll get all the way to paradise, but you have to go via the inferno.
Yeah, because I'm about to make another decision, but I can't make it. Like, yeah. I can't find the answer. And is that because I'm still in the grief?
Yes, you can. So I use the comparison of a caterpillar, and a lot of people think that caterpillars just grow wings and develop legs, longer legs and everything. But actually the process is they dissolve into a liquid. And when they're completely dissolved, it triggers a genetic code that knows how to build a butterfly from the same cells, but it has nothing to do with the other animal. So you have to let yourself die and die and die to the person you were. And then you can start to, you can trust yourself to begin, the reassembly will begin automatically if you give yourself time, space, and love as you go through the grieving part.
Oh, thank you. And it was probably, I don't normally ask personal questions like about myself on my podcast, but I couldn't not take the opportunity to ask Martha Beck what I should do.
Well, it's such a hard one. Oh my gosh, the people whose IVF treatments were interrupted by the pandemic. And then the Ukrainian situation is so horrible. And to have that be the reason for this loss, you have to grieve as if you've lost a baby. It's horrible. And you will be incredibly calm, strong, and compassionate on the other side.
Thank you so much. That's so beautiful. Martha, can I ask you about what's your joy button?
Oh, my heavens. Everything. If you keep steering your life by 1 degree toward what's warmer, everything that is around me is like on a scale from 1 to 10, it's all a plus 10. So I don't have any other buttons, really. Life, I guess, is my joy button, which is so different because it used to be the total misery and I couldn't wait to die.
Really?
And now, oh, Lord, yes. I was in my 30s before I got up one morning and thought, oh, I think I'd rather be dead than alive. I mean, alive than dead. What a change.
Wow. And you got to that point by, you know, living your message, living this life of integrity.
Yeah, just bashing away and realizing they told me the truth would set me free. So I thought, all right, here goes. Wow, what do I know about the truth? How do I find it? And then how do I live it? And it meant loss after loss after loss after loss, because I lost everything cultural that wasn't in line with my nature. But then what happens is that that other people cohere around you that are also serving their true selves. You're not alike. You don't have to be alike, except in that each of you accepts the other's perfect individuality and allows freedom for everyone else. That kind of a social circle, if we can get that to spread through the whole world, it'll change everything.
Yeah. So if someone is waking up in the morning time with a pit in their stomach, that kind of feeling of dread, is it about, like what you said, about leaning towards the warmer things, or is it something else that we can do?
The first thing that I would do, and it's all spelled out in the book in tiny steps, is say, ooh, something's not right. Okay, I'm going to acknowledge I'm not excited about today. The next thing, and this is part of the hero's saga, that when you set out on a hero's quest, like I'm going to tell the truth, in all these cultures around the world, one of the next things that happens is that a teacher shows up, a spiritual teacher. And we can provide that for ourselves. So you wake up and you say, I don't feel really good. I used to wake up and I had a shelf of books that I called my paper mothers that were my favorite books. And I would grab one of them and read until I found something that made me feel better. One of them that really hit home was from this woman named Melody Beattie, The Language of Letting Go. It said, on no day, at no hour, at no moment, are you required to do more than you can do in peace. And I just went, oh, okay, that's going to make a really different day. Like that landed with me. That resonated with my true self. So my inner teacher was validating that from an outer teacher. And that meant that I had to go through the day never doing more than I could do in peace and not trying or thinking I should do more than I could do in peace. Mm. And that in turn might have caused people to be upset with me because I wasn't doing enough for them or whatever. And I would just have to let those things, the chips fall where they may, because I had to follow the feeling of truth every moment.
Do you have a favorite book, Martha?
I do. It's been called the wisest book ever written. It's the Tao Te Ching, which is a Chinese book of philosophy, very short. And it means the way, the ever-present indwellingness of the way. I was a Chinese major in college, and it took me to that book, and it was the only good thing about for me about being a Chinese major, but it was worth it all. That book, if I only had one thing in the world, that would be it.
Wow. What is your year ahead looking like? How do you feel when you wake up in the morning?
Ooh, I wake up in the morning with a sigh. I notice more and more that when I get a little off the truth and then I got back, my body spontaneously takes this big deep breath, and it's delicious. So I usually wake up and I become conscious and I'm like, the world, it's here again. Holy smokes. And sometimes I just have to lie there going, wow, for anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour. Sometimes I sit up and use that hour to meditate. Sometimes I do different, right now I'm focusing on loving kindness meditation. And then just, connecting with my family, connecting with whatever project I'm working on. And I try to make sure it's always hard, because that edge of almost too hard, we're happy, as psychologists have found, at the point where we're doing meaningful work at a level that is almost too difficult for us. So I will always do hard things during the day, but not too hard, not so hard that I can't do them in peace. And I'm surrounded by amazing people, and there's so much love and goodness that, it could just fall apart any minute, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you just reminded me of, I trained to become a health coach last year, and there was one lecture that I was watching, and the lady was saying, tomorrow morning, wake up and just say, I'm alive. And I was like, that's the amazing way to start the day. So you've just reminded me today. I'm going to do that tomorrow. Final question for you, Martha. Thank you so much for your time. Do you believe in God winks?
Oh, hell yes. I think the entire apparent reality around us, if you meditate enough, there comes a moment where you go, oh, this is all being projected by consciousness moment to moment to moment to moment, which means that the closer connection you have to reality, and our sense of truth is how we connect with that, the more the entire world becomes a God way. Like everything starts talking to you. It's wild. I wrote a version of how that happened for me in the first draft of this book. And the editors just were like, no one's going to believe this. And when Dante gets there in the Divine Comedy, he says, stop reading. You won't believe this. Everything starts to love you. Everything starts to communicate. Everything starts to serve your best interests for all of us.
Mm. And then you get to a point where even a cup of tea is a God wink, you know, even and appreciating God, yes, the moment of it.
Yeah. And something goes wrong and that's a God wink. And something goes right and that's a God wink. It's all, once you start to see from that place of deep truth, everything reveals itself as benevolent. Mm-hmm. And the book I'm writing right now is about fear, because people say, yeah, well, I've found the truth, but I'm still afraid of death. And that's reality. And what I've realized is that fear is the deepest lie in the brain. And when you get past the lie of fear and your brain starts to shift neuroplastically, everything shows up evidently and truly as benevolent. It's not a theory. It's real. And you have to go there to find out what that is like.
Wow, Martha, I can't wait to read it. I've been ringing everyone I know and saying, I'm going to get you this book now. I've been reading this book and I need to send it to you. And I did that with What I Know For Sure. And I also did it for The Universe Has Your Back. So thank you so much, Martha, for taking the time out of your day to speak to me in Ireland today. It means so much. And I feel really happy after this conversation, and just a real, like, it was like a burst of joy.
Yeah. That's who you really are. So the more we drill down into what's right now true for you, the happier you're going to feel. And I can't wait for your book too.
Oh, thank you.
Best of luck with that.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, Martha.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Good Glow podcast. This was huge for me. 4 years ago, I was just about to finish chemotherapy. I did not know what was ahead in my life. I cried reading What I Know For Sure in chemotherapy every week. And if you had told me that 4 years later, I would be speaking to Oprah's life coach, I would have been the happiest person in the world. So I'm just taking a minute to appreciate that. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to send it on to a friend who might enjoy it. Leave me a review if you can. Please subscribe. That really helps. If you want to join us at the National Concert Hall, we've got like 5 weeks to go. We're about to meet with the Dublin Gospel Choir and pick all the songs and really set the tone for the night. We're going to do that this week. NCH.ie for tickets, and I'll see you next week.